This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Okay, hi, I'm just waiting to see, is our guest, did he call in yet? Okay, well, we are waiting for somebody really exciting. Peter Brown is, of course, so well known for his books for children, and I am just waiting for him to call in. And meanwhile, we're going to be, I love when these things happen. They're supposed to call in, and we have him on the line and ready to go, but these things sometimes happen. So I'm just waiting for Peter to call in. Now, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about is that I have put this off only because I think it's a big subject, and I've been wanting to talk about. It sort of came to me when I was reading Jeffrey Deaver's most recent book, because I get so many questions from authors who say, "Well, what's the difference between a mystery book and literature? When does a book that is in one genre change and become literature?" And so I am really interested in the change in Jeffrey Deaver's writing in his most recent book. And so I have that coming up. I've been putting it off because I want to make it into an entire program, actually. And I am going to try to get him to really talk about what happened with this new book and how he developed as a writer, because it's really quite fascinating. Now, one of the things, let's see, I've got a voice message here. Ed, I've got a voice message coming in. So I think something's happened to our guest, but I'm going to try and see what's happening. And meanwhile, Ed, can you pull up one of Rita Moreau's book buzzes, maybe number 14? Do you have it available? I'm just looking at Big Ed in the control room, and we'll see if we can pull up a book buzz while I check what's happening to Peter.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest from Book Buzz. Murder and Whistler is book two in the Northwest Cozy Mystery series by Diane Harmon. Here's the buzz. When Dee Dee and her boyfriend Jake head to Whistler, British Columbia, to see her sister Roz and enjoy a little downtime, the last thing they expect is to become involved in a murder. What makes it even worse is the person murdered is Dee Dee's former neighbor, Johnny Roberts. He was bigger than life, but did he have secrets? Who would want Johnny dead? Was it the man who years ago had tried to steal Johnny's wife, Cassie? Was it the sexy saleswoman in Johnny's car dealership who didn't care whether or not Johnny was married but wanted revenge when he rejected her? Was it his brother who resented Johnny for being the frugal administrator of his trust fund? Or could it even be the Mercer Island Golf Club pro who felt threatened by Johnny's golf game? Hey, grab Diane Harmon's entertaining cozy Murder and Whistler and join Dee Dee, Jake, their husky dogs, Balto and Yukon, and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police as they try to figure out who murdered Johnny Roberts and why. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper.com. This is Rita Moreau buzzing off for now.
Okay, I think we have a problem today with Peter Brown. So what we're going to do is let's do that Nat Geo interview that I just did. And we'll play that because I talked this morning to one of the editors at Nat Geo, and we'll play that. Okay? Yeah, we'll have a break. Yeah. With Peter Brown. Hi, Peter.
How you doing?
Okay, fantastic. I am so happy to have you on Joy on Paper. You know, I've been rereading your books, all of them. I went back and I read the picture books, and I've been reading all of your books. And you know, it is so exciting to see how an author develops. And you have just You get better and better all the time. And the newest book, of course, is, you know, it just blows my mind because the first book I think it's going to be a series, which is called The Wild Robot. And now the new book is The Wild Robot Escapes. They're marvelous books.
Well, thank you. That's nice to hear.
Well, you know, I was reminded of you. You know, I had read your book, the picture books, and I wanted to say that, you know, the first one of your picture books that I read, now my boys are older, and so I didn't get to read them to the kids, but when I came across one, I'll tell you the one that I started off. It was, "My Teacher's a Monster." No, I'm not. And yeah. I love that book. I said, my goodness, this is an amazing book. You just captured so much, I don't know, a feeling in there that I thought, wow, kids are going to really love this book. And I was right. And so then you went on and as I said, you did the picture books, and then you came to the novel, The Wild Robot. And wow, that book, when it came out and I read it, you know, One of your biggest fans his name is Nathan, and so we have to give a special shout out to Nathan because he reminded me of how very much he loved The Wild Robot, and how he was looking forward to the new book because there's something. Let's talk about Roz in The Wild Robot. How you came out with her, because she is really she's a character. I mean, You forget after a while, you're reading it, and you know she's a robot, but she's Roz.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was really determined to make a book, a robot book for people who don't like robot stories, you know, one that would kind of win them over because I love science fiction so much, and a lot of people are kind of turned off by it for some reason. So I was really intrigued by writing a story about the least robotic robot, you know, a robot who learns to communicate with animals, who becomes kind of part of the wilderness, who learns all these life lessons, actually, from the animals she gets to know in the wilderness, including, you know, how to, like, take care of each other and how to become part of a community and all the benefits that come with it. And so, you know, I just sort of took the reader on this step-by-step process where we see this robot starting off kind of like a stereotypical robotic character. But we gradually watch her transform into this kind of what seems like a loving, feeling, really kind of generous, soulful character. Because I, you know, I feel like there's a lot of different subjects you can explore with science fiction and even with a robotic character. And I really thought I could do something interesting that maybe people weren't used to. And so that's what I was setting out to do.
And you did, because I think one of the things that people never think about is that in many ways, animals have sort of robotic traits, that they do the same thing over and over, and they have a certain pattern that fits in with a robot.
Yeah, well, that was one of the interesting things I was reading about in my research. You know, I've always loved science fiction and science and nature. And one of the things that really grabbed my attention was when I started realizing that what seemed like total opposites, a robot and a wild animal, they actually have things in common. You know, animal instincts really determine a lot of animal behavior, and I'm not sure that they're fully aware of what they're doing. You know, when animals flee from danger, or when they form herds, or if they migrate for winter, I'm not sure they're weighing their options and they're deciding this is what we should do right now. I think they're just doing it automatically. And in a way, that sort of reminds me of a computer program, you know, or a robot maybe program where this character is kind of doing things automatically. And in the beginning, Roz is, all of her behaviors are pretty much what you would expect, but things kind of start going off in a funny direction over time. But I'm always thinking about the similarities and differences between computer programming and animal instincts. And that seemed like a really interesting subject that I could explore that would really bring people in, you know, because most people like animal stories, even adults love, you know, Charlotte's Web and all those stories from childhood. And so I felt like if I could really involve all these different kinds of characters and animals, and, then I could even win over the people who aren't interested in robot stories, because there's sort of something for everyone, you know.
Exactly. Now, of course, Roz starts off as a robot, as you say, Rosam 7134. She's got a number. But the fascinating thing that you did with her as she's evolving, and this is, of course, where the story really comes alive, you've turned her into a mother. And yeah. once she's a mother, once she takes on you explain how she becomes a mother. Not the normal way, but for a robot, right. Perhaps, but an interesting way.
Yeah, well, once she learns to communicate with the animals, then, you know, she can develop friends and enemies and even a family. And so I was thinking, again, in my attempt to really just pull all the little strings to make people care about this robot character, I was thinking about all the different ways that I pull people in, and I thought, well, if she develops some sort of a family, that would help, and we can relate to her even more if I can make her some sort of a family. And obviously, she wasn't going to give birth to anyone, but I thought, you know, she could adopt an animal as her son. And you know, geese are known for imprinting, right? Where if a scientist is sort of there when a goose hatches from its shell, from its egg. And there to take care of this goose, the goose will imprint on the person, on the scientist, and sort of think that they're the goose's mother and really latch onto them. And I thought, well, if a goose can imprint on a person, why not on a robot? And so that's why I chose a goose character. Roz finds this goose egg in the woods, basically, who's orphaned and has no family of his own. And she, instead of leaving it behind and just going about her business, she builds it a little nest. And when the eggshell hatches the next day, the first thing this gosling sees is Roz. And so the bird just assumes this creature taking care of him is his mother, and Roz decides that she can't abandon him. So she basically adopts him as her son. And so suddenly she's got this funny little family, and she can communicate with the animals already. So she can have, even though he doesn't have very many words when he's born, but we see him develop, and we see his vocabulary developing as the chapters go by. And we see their relationship developing too.
And of course his name is Brightbill, and the thing is it becomes so believable, this mother son relationship, that as I said, and from Nathan and from the other kids who I know who have read this book, they are so sure, you know, it's like, yes, that's a mom and son. And that's a great accomplishment on your part, that you've written it so beautifully.
Well, thank you. I feel like if you were to start the book halfway through, it would not make any sense at all. You know, like you would be like, what? This robot has a goose for a son in the woods? What is going on? Probably a lot of people would be so confused that they wouldn't even keep reading. But of course, you're not supposed to start from the beginning, but from the middle of the book, you start from the beginning, and from the beginning you see the gradual progression, you know, and it makes sense. And so I was pretty happy to see when the book finally came out that that it worked, you know, and that kids were following along, they're getting into, adults were too. A lot of parents and teachers are contacting me about how much they've connected with the story. And to think that basically children are really kind of emotionally invested in a character who's basically a robotic single mom in the woods with a goose for a son is I don't know, feels pretty good to me.
Well, it should, because as I said, it takes a real talent to be able to pull this off, because in a lesser hand it would not work. But you have a way of you've made us really. We've become part of the story as we watch her change, as we watch her get more empathetic and more understanding. And
yeah.
So we do forget. And that is just beautiful.
Well, you know, one of the many tricks that I used to pull people in was I have the narrator talk to the reader, you know, addressing the reader, saying things like, "Now, reader, let me explain this to you." And it's just a simple little trick. You see it in kids' novels all the time. But I do feel like in this particular instance, it was very, very effective, just because it really did feel like the reader was part of the experience. At least that's what I was trying to do, is like make it feel like you're right there, kind of just a fly on the wall, but you're actually really there observing this stuff and almost part of it, because I'm including you. The narrator is including you in the experience, and
it works. It works, and the thing is, it's not always sweet. There's conflict in the book. There's dangers in the book, and children, I think, relate to that.
Yeah. Well, it had to be something. There had to be conflict, of course. I don't think I would have been doing anybody a favor if I had made this just a kind of a sweet story and everything happily ever after. You know, for me, I thought, not only do I want to accomplish all these things, like making people care about this robotic character, but I really want to have this thing feel authentic, you know, and believable in a way. As crazy as a story as it sounds, I want it to almost seem believable. And so I felt like, well, if this actually happened, if a robot really found herself stranded on an island and trying to survive, like, there would be harsh situations. There'd be, animals wouldn't know what to do with this thing. There might be a bear. I wouldn't blame a bear for attacking a robot stomping through the woods. And so there's conflict there. And then, of course, there's other things that, you know, sort of her mysterious past comes back to haunt her at the end of the story. And then there's a whole other level of action and conflict. And, I've had some conversations with people who said that the violence in the book is pretty, pretty mild. I didn't really want to dwell on that and get too detailed in that stuff. But I did feel like we have to hint at the fact that there are some fights between Roz and these bears. You know, there are some other sort of physical altercations that happen. But one of the things I did to kind of, I think, make it a little more palatable to people is I say that Roz is programmed to not be violent. And so I think that's a really important part of her character, is the fact that we know that whatever situation she gets herself into, her solution is going to be peaceful. And we can't really blame wild animals for being wild. And so I don't think we hold anybody, we're not really angry at any of the characters. They're just behaving as they should behave. And then Roz's challenge is to get out of that situation peacefully. So, you know, it was a lot. It was kind of a tightrope walk, but I had a very clear set of goals that I was trying to do that helped me navigate all of that.
Well, of course, when you wrote book one, The Wild Robot, and you left us with that cliffhanger ending...
Yeah,
we all knew that there had to be another. There had to be another book. So now I think we're off to running for a nice series that'll probably, you'll be doing this now for the next 50 years.
I wouldn't mind it. I'll be honest with you. I love the characters. I love the world. I will hopefully be making more Wild Robot books. But I'm going to take a little break. These books are really hard to write, and you know, I'm pretty new to novel writing, so I'm. My next project will probably be a picture book again, but then I'm going to come back to chapter books for sure. Too much fun not to come back to them.
Exactly. And once you, well, it's like, you know, whenever you, a writer comes out with a great character. Lee Child came out with Jack Reacher, you know, and you came out with Roz. And so you just have to keep it going because you get these fans, and somebody like Nathan will say, oh, you know, they wait for the book, and they get so excited when it comes out, and they read it, and then they have to read it again.
Yeah.
The kids I've talked to, they read it once, and then they read it again.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think their first reading, it's sort of like the Harry Potter books. The kids would read them, and they wanted to read it really fast, you know, to get the story, but they all went back and read it again to get the details. And that's always a great compliment to a writer.
Yeah. If it works on multiple reads, that's a dream come true. You want that, and
And I think that with this book, with the series, you will have this. I think the readers, young readers, and their parents who read the books will say, "Okay, we can read that one again." It's not like what's that terrible one I don't like. there's a terrible children's book that I don't like. Where the Wild Things Are. You know those, that one? The Wild Thing one?
You don't like Where the Wild Things Are.
No, I can't read that again. One time is enough. But this one, because there's depth to this book, to Roz. And, it's fun. There's I feel like there's I call this program Joy on Paper because I love to see writers just having fun, just loving what they're doing. And you do. We get that in this book, and I think that's why children can relate to it. And I think why I was happy that that so many schools did pick this up, because sometimes they pick up books that aren't full of joy. But I think this series, the Wild Robot series, is one that has joy in it, and I love that.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. I definitely, obviously the writing process can be grueling at times, but the underlying character and the underlying story was so fascinating to me. I was so excited that I had the chance to develop this whole world and these characters that it was definitely. It was definitely an exhilarating experience for me, and I'm glad that kind of shone through in the words, you know.
And of course, because you are interested in robots, and this has been an interest of yours for many years, so it's something that you study and that you know something about.
Yeah. I mean, I went to a robot lab to do some research, and I did a lot of reading and listening to experts and all this kind of stuff. And because again, as crazy as the story sounds, I felt like I want to make this as believable. So you have to do the work and get to know the real facts and see if there's a way to kind of weave some authenticity into this sort of fantasy story. But it's a subject that I've loved forever. Especially nature. I grew up kind of out in the woods a little bit, and the idea of combining advanced technology with nature in one story is just, it doesn't get any better than that for me. So these books were really a dream.
Now, have you been yet to the hotel in Japan, the robot hotel? It's called the Henna Hotel.
I have not been, no.
Okay, well, that's where you have to head next.
Yeah. I'm going to Japan next spring. So
okay.
Maybe I'll have to check it out.
Have they translated the book into Japanese yet?
They have.
Yeah. Okay, well, then when you get to Japan, they have to put you in the Henna Hotel, which is,
of course, an
all-robotic hotel.
Wow.
And you walk up to the desk clerk, and it's a robot, and you walk up, well, wherever you go, it's all robotic. And,
yeah.
I mean, this is, when you go on this publicity tour there, you really must make sure that you stay there, because it will get you enormous coverage. And they should have your book there in the lobby. This is yeah. You know, if they're going to carry any book, they should have a big display here of your books in the lobby, because anybody, I think that's part of the fun for people who stay in the Robot Hotel, if they are actually reading the Wild Robot books. Can you imagine yeah. that?
That would be great. Yeah, I'll have to look into that. That sounds like a good plan.
Oh, absolutely. You tell your publicist. They can arrange it, because I know that it would be something that will, it'll get you news, and it'll be fun, because if anyone should stay at the Robot Hotel, it should be you.
Yeah, I agree. I'm gonna probably look into that once we get off the phone.
Yeah, you go onto their website. They have a nice website, and they show you all the rooms. And 25,000 yen gets you a deluxe room in this Robot Hotel, and I think you will really enjoy it, and fun there. I know Japan is my son went to Japan many times and loves it in general, but certainly to stay at the Robot Hotel in Japan will be something special for you.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Okay, now listen, I have to take a quick commercial break, but would you do me a favor and stay on the line, because I want to talk to you about your picture books. I have so many authors coming to me who are working on picture books, and they would so love to hear your advice and to hear more about how you go about, because in addition to the novel, you are a great illustrator. And so just hold on for a minute. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, yep. We'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I, or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with New York Times best-selling author and Caldecott Award-winning author, Peter Brown. Hi, Peter.
Oh, how you doing?
Okay, so took a little break there, and now we are going to be able to have some time to talk about all of your other work besides the wonderful The Wild Robot and The Wild Robot Escapes. Now, you are a writer and an illustrator, and this is so wonderful. And of course, as I mentioned at the beginning, one of my favorites is My Teacher is a Monster. No, I'm not. And and of course, I really like Mr. Tiger Goes Wild. I thought that was a great, as an illustrator there, you really were amazing.
Well, thank you.
that
book was, that was a fun book to make. Yeah, as the author and the illustrator, you get you know, because I do both. Sometimes I illustrate stories for other authors, but I have to say, when I get to do both, you get to make decisions that probably wouldn't have occurred to you otherwise, you know, when you're kind of bouncing back and forth between words and pictures. And the Mr. Tiger Goes Wild was an example of a book where it really happened organically and was a lot of fun to make.
Now, when you were doing your own picture book, do you do the words first or the picture first? How does it come to you? Did the picture comes into your head and then you write the story to go with it, or vice versa?
It's always different. Depends kind of on the story. I wrote and illustrated a picture book years ago called The Curious Garden, which started off as pictures. It was inspired by what is now the Highline Park in Manhattan, this really beautiful old elevated railway that's been turned into a city park. But so there was this inspiration of this sort of wildflowers and nature growing by itself in this little abandoned corner of this dreary city. So I just started drawing scenes kind of like the Highline Park in my sketchbook, and I didn't really know where the story was going, but I knew there was something in there. So I probably spent 6 months or even a year just kind of having fun drawing scenes of nature growing and surprising places in a city. And eventually a story started kind of coming to me over time, but other stories happen in other ways. You know, I wrote and illustrated a book called Children Make Terrible Pets, which started off as just a sentence, which was something like, a wild animal brings home a boy to be its pet. And I literally wrote those words in my notebook, and it was kind of off to the races at that point. So, you know, every book has a different journey, so I never know exactly how it's going to work out.
So how often does it happen where you write a line, but then the picture says it for you, so that you don't...
Oh. Most of the time. Most of the time I'll agonize over every word of a picture book text, only then to realize that half the text can be cut entirely because I'll just show all that stuff with the artwork, you know. I've learned over the years not even really to bother writing any form of description in the manuscript, because that's what the pictures are for. So now my manuscripts for picture books are really streamlined and really sparse, because so much of the work can be done with pictures.
And so beautifully done. And it's, you know, one of the things I want to mention to all of my listeners that you have a website, which I think everyone should go to. It's Peter Brown. What?
PeterBrownStudio.com.
PeterBrownStudios.com. And everybody can see your first book, which you wrote when you were six.
Six, yeah.
Now, you know, I know that, you know, for a six-year-old, I think it's great. And one of the things that caught my attention, and that's why I think, you know, it's one of the things we have to do with children is to encourage them to write. If they start writing at a young age and being proud of seeing their work on paper and being proud of seeing their drawings and their, it just, it brings them into this world of reading and writing that's so important.
I agree. Absolutely.
And I thought, even, you know, it's was written by a six-year-old, but what captured my attention, I loved, of course, that one of the several of the illustrations, but one of them, as the book is called The Adventures of Me and My Dog Buffy, written and illustrated by Peter Brown. And in this illustration, first of all, I love that Buffy can get in a tree, climb a tree.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was really cool, because I used to, my dog was Sammy. Now, he did not climb the tree, but I would carry him up there.
Oh, really?
Because I had like a little platform in an apple tree, and that's where I would hide out and read my books, because I was always reading. And I'm not sure he really appreciated going up there on that platform with me, but I'd drag him along. But what I liked, and I thought, that's so original, you have yourself falling asleep in the forest, standing up against a tree.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, I like that kid. If I saw that just as a kid's drawing, I'd say, you know, I like that kid. He's sleeping against a tree. There's something interesting about it. This is so, you know, you started back then and you've just kept going.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny, that book that you mentioned is one I'd forgotten about over the years, but of course my mom held on to it, and when I got my first book published back in 2005, my mom sent me a care package including some drawings and books that I'd made when I was a kid that I'd forgotten about, and that was one of them. And I'm really glad she did, because I spent a lot of time, I visit a lot of schools and libraries, and of course I do bookstore events and things like that from time to time. And reading that book has become a really important part of my presentation, because when I'm reading to an auditorium filled with children and I read them my first book, and it's kind of weird, it's not particularly well done, but there's, you know, little moments here and there in the story that are funny, like the one where the boy's sleeping standing up. You know, kids can relate to that. And so I'm so grateful that my mom held on to that stuff. Of course, she threw away most of my artwork over the years, and I can't blame her, because I was making a lot of it. But I'm really glad she held on to that book, because I feel like when I read that book to kids, it really opens them up to everything else that I have to say. So it's funny that you bring that up now, because I read that story constantly to kids.
Well, and as I said, I think it is just so wonderful for kids to be able to see that. Now, you know, one of the things that's going to happen with the next generation, all of the writers who are writing now, not for illustrated books, but all the writers who write on the computer, there are no versions. There aren't like the, mm-hmm. all the first drafts. Like, we can go back and study F. Scott Fitzgerald or Hemingway, or, you know, all of, yeah, these authors. We can see. So often we can see how they started and then the development. Now, of course, everybody has their final version, and that's all anybody's going to see. They won't have anything to leave to the universities. But but with you, it's nice to see this development. And you have, you know, from the age of six. So now we really have somebody's going to do one of these dissertations about you someday, a PhD, you know. 30 years from now, 40 years from now, somebody will do a PhD dissertation about Peter Brown and the development of a great writer. And there it will be, and they will have this first book. And I think it's so cool.
Well, you know, and also being an author and an illustrator, people like me are in a little bit of a different position, because so often we'll be drawing in our sketchbook, working out some visuals for a picture book, and then we'll make notes to ourselves about the text at the same time. You know, we'll have an idea for an image, and maybe we have an idea for words that would match that image perfectly, and so we'll jot that down. And then before we know it, maybe we're jotting down other words, and suddenly we're writing more and more in our sketchbook. And so I do think that author-illustrators will leave behind more sort of physical proof of their work, as opposed to purely authors who do everything on their computer, you know.
And also it's more valuable because you'll be able to, you know, frame it and sell it as a...
Yeah.
And I mean, that's one of the things that's going to be really fun for you. So, as you know, when you get down to when you're doing, you know, number 50 in the Wild Robot series, and then you'll be able to, you know, have all this artwork. And
that's right. And now
nobody's going to be throwing out your artwork, that's for sure. As a matter of fact, your mother probably, she actually should be searching, what do I have left, because I can now sell it.
I don't know. I think the joke might be on her if she tries to sell my stuff on eBay. Maybe at the end of my career, who knows, maybe I could auction something off or something, but I don't know. People are... Whatever. We'll see. We'll just see.
Because, I'm sure that, as a matter of fact, I'm sure that even today, you know, if you offer some of your illustrations for charity organizations, people will just jump at being able to own an original of your work. Because it is great. You know, I just, as I said, I love the illustrations. In Tiger Goes Wild, they were. It was very clever the way that you did the sepia tones in one section, and I thought it was very well thought out, from the illustration point of view, the artist point of view.
Yeah, well, thanks. I I'm an illustrator first, really. I went to school and studied illustration, and that book was something I could really sink my teeth into. And every aspect of it was thought out, the color palette and how the color palette changes as the story progresses and the way the characters change over time and the use of color. Mr. Tiger in that book, you know, most books are printed with four inks, cyan, magenta, yellow, and black. That's how the vast majority of picture books are printed. But for this book, we used the fifth ink. We used all those four inks, and then we used a special orange ink because we really wanted Mr. Tiger to pop off the page because he's the star of the story, and he's different from the other characters. And so even the production of that book was really carefully thought out. It was a fun thing to make.
And it really does. As an example of a great children's book and great children's illustration, I think it is at the top of the list, because with this use of the orange and with your entire palette and the intelligent use of color in that book, it's a striking illustration of illustrations. How about that?
Yeah, I like that.
Okay. So now, as you said, you also illustrate other authors' books, and one of them. Let's see, who did you illustrate for? You did for Cat Weatherall, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course for Aaron Reynolds, with the Creepy Carrots.
Yeah.
Now, right. Now, how did that one come to you? The Creepy Carrots one.
Well, that was Aaron's manuscript. Aaron Reynolds wrote the story, and he and I actually have the same literary agent, and so our agent knew that he was working on this story and thought I might be a good fit for the illustrator. So they sent it over to me, and I loved it. As soon as I read this manuscript, so basically it's about this rabbit, for anyone who doesn't know, it's about a rabbit named Jasper who thinks he's being haunted by his favorite snack, carrots. Everywhere he goes, he sees carrots, and they're not friendly, and they're not edible. They're like kind of looking like they're coming for him. And as I was reading the manuscript originally, it reminded me of The Twilight Zone, that old classic TV show. And so I basically decided to make this book feel kind of like an episode of The Twilight Zone. So it's black and white. It's got almost a film noir look to the artwork. There's one color, orange, for the carrots. Everything else is black and white with moody shadows and dramatic lighting and camera angles and... That was one of those things where I don't illustrate many books for other authors, but every now and then I'll come across a manuscript that just really speaks to me, and that one sure did.
Well, I was wondering if they came to you because they knew you were good with orange, because...
Oh, because of Mr. Tiger.
Yeah, I mean, they knew you could do orange, so I guess they figured...
Well, actually, Creepy Carrots came out first.
Yeah?
Creepy Carrots came out in, I think, 2011, and Mr. Tiger, I think, came out in 2012. So actually, my orange
comes from the carrots.
Started with the carrots.
Okay. Because you capture orange beautifully, I must say.
Thank you.
It is one of my favorite. I love orange. I want an orange car.
The funny thing is, I don't actually particularly like orange. It is definitely not one of my favorite colors. But it just so happened that I had two books in a row that really featured orange prominently, and there's no way around it, because in Creepy Carrots, carrots are known for being orange. There are other colored carrots, of course, but most people think of them as being orange, and so that seemed like an obvious color choice. And then Mr. Tiger's thought of as being orange too, and the first book had to have carrots and the second book had to have tigers, and so I just ended up having to use a whole lot of orange for a couple of years, and it worked out.
Okay, well, now you should just wear an orange hat too, and then yeah, that's one of the things that writers have to think about, as you are now doing. Of course, you do a lot of things where you go around and see and meet your fans, because you have so many, and it is such a great thing for an author to get out there and to be noticed and to be seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, as much as we'd like to think that our books all sell themselves, it doesn't hurt to remind people that your books exist. So I feel like that's what a book tour is for, basically, is just to announce to the world, hey, everybody, I know there's a lot of distractions out there, but maybe take a minute to look at what I've got going on. And I don't know how books are sold otherwise.
Yeah, well, I know that yesterday you had a Barnes & Noble event, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and you were recently in Houston even. You did I know that bookstore, the Blue Willow Bookshop.
Yeah, it's a great store. I was out there because an elementary school, Harvard Elementary School in Houston, they do this one book, one school project. A lot of schools do this these days, where they choose one book and everybody in the entire school reads the same book over the same sort of period of time. Younger kids might have it read to them. Older kids might read it for themselves. But this elementary school bought a copy of The Wild Robot for every single student. It was almost 700 books. And then for the sort of finale of their experience all reading The Wild Robot together, they wanted me to come out and visit and give a presentation. So that's what I did. My publisher sent me out there, and I met with the whole school. And then while I was there, I went and did an event at Blue Willow Bookshop, which was really great. So that was a really fun trip.
Well, I think it's wonderful. And it is so important to get children interested in reading, where they have a real investment in themselves, where they really are excited to meet a writer and to learn more about the books and just to keep reading, because that's what all of us need. We need readers. So to have a writer who can start a child off on the right path. This is so vital.
Well, you know, I feel like it's not enough to teach kids how to read. I think we need people who, we need what I call joyful readers, people who read for the pure pleasure of it. Because if you really enjoy reading, then you're going to read a lot. And if you're just reading because your teacher tells you to, you know, you might do the homework and then you stop reading. And what happens when you go to college or when you leave college? Then you just never read ever again? I think for a lot of people, that is the case. A lot of people finish college and then they just basically stop reading because they're not joyful readers. They don't actually haven't found the books that prove to them how much fun and satisfying it can be. And so that's always something I keep in mind is, that's what I'm shooting for here. I want to make books that I express my own feelings and ideas, of course, but I'm also very aware of my audience, and I'm trying to prove to kids that reading is the kind of thing that you can do for fun, and they can do it for the rest of their lives. And, you know, not every kid might be able to afford college, but every kid can afford a library card. And if you love to read and you go to the library, you're going to learn stuff, you're going to feel empowered to kind of forge your own path, and that sense of empowerment is so important and I think lacking in a lot of people these days.
And reading is something that you can keep doing forever, and as a matter of fact, the more you do it, the better for your mind. When you meet older people, the ones who are readers are the ones who are interesting, the ones who are whose minds haven't gotten dull from lack of use.
I agree. I love readers. You know, my mom is the most voracious reader I know, and I know a lot of readers. But every time I visit my mom, she's got a new stack of literally probably 15 books checked out from the library. Big, a lot of fiction. I mean, she reads everything, nonfiction, you name it. And we have really interesting conversations because she knows stuff. You learn when you read, and even if you're not reading nonfiction, if you're reading fiction or even fantasy or whatever, you're learning about yourself. You're imagining how you would react in these wild situations, and you get a better self-understanding, which is so important. And so I just think reading is the best, and we need more readers, as you said.
And you are definitely getting them and heading them in the right direction. And the new book is The Wild Robot Escapes, and I'm sure once you do another picture book, and you sort of have all this fun of it, is so much fun to be an artist also. So you have double the fun. You get to do the drawings and you get to do the words. So it's really, you have found the real joy on paper, haven't you?
I have. I love my job.
Okay.
No denying it.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Peter, for being on the program today. It's been a joy to talk to you. I am just always so, I can pick up your books at any time and just, you know, your picture books, and just read them and have a smile on my face. And I think that's important. And I want to thank you for that.
Well, thanks for having me, and thanks for reading.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. Whoa, I'm so glad we got. Oh, he's marvelous. Really great. My goodness, can you imagine him at the Henna Hotel in Tokyo, there with all the robots? Oh, he's going to have such a fun time. And as I said, I think that once he... the hotel is aware of him, they will put his books out there on a big display so that anybody who goes to the hotel can read it. I'm not sure. It's going to be... I wasn't really so hep on going to Japan, but now that I've been reading about this hotel, I would like to try it just for fun. I would like to go and see what it... It's beautiful. Go to the website. It's called Henna. It's a very interesting, and everything is robotic, including a robotic dinosaur, which I really love those robotic dinosaurs. So that's something that you might want to do. And while you're there, you can go to that hotel, and we're going to be talking next week about more about that and about many other things. But meanwhile, I want to remind everyone that it is just so important that if you could just go to Facebook and like me on Facebook. It's Radio Joy on Paper. I need like a zillion million likes. And if you could do that for me, I would really appreciate it. It only takes a minute. And all you have to do is go Radio Joy on Paper. And from there, you can also have links to my website, which is radio-joy on paper. Remember, next month I have Bill Larson coming up. He is our legal eagle, and he's going to be talking about a lot of interesting cases, but particularly one where somebody is trying to copyright a word. Just this person wants that word, and they don't want anybody else in the world able to use a particular word. I mean, now, I've heard of a lot of things, but that sounds crazy to me. But we'll ask Bill Larson. And there is a form on my front page of my webpage. You can send in your intellectual property question, and Bill will be happy to answer them, and so that you don't get into legal trouble. I don't know if you can copyright a word, but we will find out, and that will be an interesting subject. So Bill Larson will be here in June, in 2 weeks. So meanwhile, remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're really, really lucky, to have them spoken in a film. So all you have to do is start writing, and you never know what can happen. And please buy a book for a child for this summer. Get out there, and there are wonderful Nat Geo books out there that you will want them to read. And, of course, the wonderful Wild Robot books by Peter Brown. Kids will just have so much fun reading them, and you will be very happy to talk to them about all of the things that robots can do when they're given a chance. So that's another thing that you should look forward to this summer. Okay, have a great weekend. It's going to be a long weekend. We have a long weekend? I think so. No, it's not this weekend. When's Memorial Day? The following weekend? Oh, good. Okay, so don't have a long weekend, but have a reading weekend. Okay. Bye-bye now.